Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I'm going to do Ecclesiastes chapter 11 in this audio, a very short chapter, 10 verses. I will entitle it, Cast Your Bread Upon the Waters. We start now in verses 1 through 2 of Ecclesiastes 11. Solomon says this, Cast your bread on the surface of the waters, for you will find it after many days. Divide your portion to 7 or even to 8, for you do not know what misfortune may occur on the earth. Now, if you're like me and you read those two verses, you'll think, what in the world is Solomon talking about? Well, first of all, cast. Cast your bread on the waters. Cast means throw it out there freely with no compulsion. Throw it out. Now, what does the whole expression mean, cast your bread on the surface of the waters? I'm going to give you several options. Option number 1. This expression refers to the practice of ships going out on the surface of waters in international commerce. So casting your bread would be like casting your grain in the hull of a ship which goes out on the surface of the Mediterranean Sea, for example, to go out and trade, and then returning with large profitable cargoes. Now, here is a translation supporting that, the NIV. Ship your grain across the sea. After many days, you may receive a return. Now, gotquestions.org questions the NIV interpretation by saying that the context does not support this interpretation. If we drop back to Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verses 10 through 17, we will see a screed against the evils of wealth. But here in Ecclesiastes 11, Solomon, according to the NIV, is urging you to make wealth by shipping your grain to a port somewhere. Well, sure, we can read Ecclesiastes 5, 10 through 17 and see that Solomon is very upset about people who are consumed with the love of money. Let me read that for you very quickly. The one who loves money is never satisfied with money, and whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with income. This, too, is futile. When good things increase, the ones who consume them multiply. What, then, is the profit to the owner except to gaze at them with his eyes? The sleep of the worker is sweet, whether he eats little or much, but the abundance of the rich permits him no sleep. There is a sickening tragedy I have seen under the sun, wealth kept by its owner to his harm. That wealth was lost in a bad venture, so when he fathered a son, he was empty-handed. As he came from his mother's womb, so he will go again, naked as he came. He will take nothing for his efforts that he can carry in his hands. This, too, is a sickening tragedy. Exactly as he comes, so he will go. In other words, naked. He's born and naked he dies. What does the one gain who struggles for the wind? What is more, he eats in darkness all his days, with much sorrow, sickness, and anger. Okay, so Solomon doesn't like people who fall in love with money. But I don't think this answer that the NIV comes up with is necessarily wrong. And I don't think that the objections that gotquestions.org are necessarily right, because if you take this to refer to legitimate commerce, there's nothing wrong with that. Solomon in Ecclesiastes 5 is complaining about an individual who loves money too much. There is nothing wrong about engaging in international commerce and making money as long as you don't let it go to your head and consume you. I mean, Abraham was rich. Nothing wrong with being rich. And so we will leave open the possibility that option number 1 is what this phrase means. Casting your bread on the surface of the waters is sending out grain ships in order to make money. Can't make money unless you invest. Can't make money unless you spend money. That's option number 1. Now here's a somewhat off-the-wall option. Option number 2 from Adam Clark. This expression, cast your bread upon the waters, refers to the sowing of rice. If you think about it, rice is planted in very watery terrain, and you throw the rice out there on the terrain and it grows on the water. You cast your rice on the water and it grows. As we've seen from the NIV, bread can be grain and rice is grain too, so that is a possibility. Of course, the purpose of the expression throwing your rice on the water so it will grow is for a metaphor, meaning that we should give alms to the poor. And if alms are given to the poor, those alms will be as seed sown in good ground, producing fruit. That's option number 2, a possibility. Here's option number 3. The expression, cast your bread upon the waters, comes from the custom of casting seed from boats into the overflowing waters of the Nile. When the waters receded, the grain in the alluvial soil sprang up. Alluvial means soil that's deposited by flowing rivers, And so the idea, again, is to throw your seed out there in the Nile and it will pop up and grow. Again, as a metaphor for giving money to the poor. Well, that's option number three. I guess it's possible. I don't think it's likely. Here's option number four. This is just a general meaning that casting your bread upon the waters is a metaphor for being generous, even if a return seems unlikely. In other words, we don't get to get down in the weeds about exactly what does the expression mean. We just need to look at the interpretation, which we need to be generous to the poor. And I don't think anybody can disagree with that. And we should be generous even if a return from our charity seems unlikely. Now, here are two translations which go along with that. Ecclesiastes 11:1 in the Contemporary English Version, CEV, be generous and someday you will be rewarded. And in the Easy Reading Version, do good wherever you go. After a while, the good you do will come back to you. Now, here are some arguments in favor of this interpretation of the expression. Casting bread on the water seems to be an exercise in futility. Now, of course, this option number four assumes not that the seed is planted in the ground, but it's just thrown on top of the water. And if so, then one would think that the person doing that is being foolish. But the expression means you don't know what the results might be. The bread, the seed, might find a place to grow as it is carried on down the river or as it sinks to the bottom. So just like you don't know how being generous to someone might affect the future when that someone gives you a return sometime in the future or when God gives you a return in the future. Now the context favors this because in the very next verse in Ecclesiastes 11:2, Solomon says, give a portion to seven or even to eight. That means give to a lot of people. For you don't know what disaster may happen on earth. I'll talk about what that means in a minute. But the point is, it's talking about giving charitably to people. So that's what the expression means. Cast your bread upon the waters. Whatever its initial signification is, the meaning is clear. So here's some other scriptures expressing the same idea. Proverbs chapter 11, verse 18, Solomon says, the wicked man earns an empty wage, but the one who sows righteousness, a true reward. That's not sowing money, but it's sowing righteousness. Same idea, though. You sow and then you reap. Galatians 6:9, Paul says, so we must not get tired of doing good, for we will reap at the proper time if we don't give up. And again, that's not exactly financial money. Not necessarily, it could be. But do good, it'll come back to you. Now, this is not a mathematical formula. Humans are volitional creatures. In a particular instance, one might give to somebody and get nothing back from that person that you give to. Or you might give and get nothing back from the Lord. It's not a chemical or mathematical formula. Give and you get it back. I know many times I've given money and then had something bad happen and lost money. But over the long haul, there's no question you give, God will give back to you. You can bank on that. But this is not a mathematical formula like so many people in the prosperity message like to make it. I've heard that verse quoted a million times by these prosperity folks. Of course, unfortunately, a lot of times the giving they're talking about is giving to their own particular ministry, which is absurd, unbiblical, and nauseating. But Solomon is just stating from his observation what generally happens. He looks around, he sees that people are generous and charitable. They usually have good things happen to them. Now let's look at verse 2. Divide your portion to seven or even to eight, for you do not know what misfortune may occur on the earth. What is not knowing about what misfortune will occur on the earth, what has that got to do with giving to a lot of people, seven or eight, which is just a Hebrew way of saying a lot? Well, here's a couple of options as to what that means. It could mean that something bad may happen, and this will keep you from giving to the needy. So the verse would read, you do not know what misfortune may occur on the earth, so go ahead and give your money now, while you've got it. Adam Clark and Jameson Fawcett and Brown say, rather, that what this verse means is that something bad may happen to you and necessitate you receiving alms yourself. In other words, you better give, because if you don't give, then nobody will give to you. And then when misfortune occurs and you need money, there won't be any, because nobody's going to be giving it to you. And I think that's probably what it means. Give so that you can receive. Give so that you can receive, so that you might be able to reap, because one day something bad might happen to you and you won't have a harvest to tide you over. We go now to Ecclesiastes chapter 11, verse 3. Solomon continues, if the clouds are full, they pour out rain upon the earth. And whether a tree falls toward the south or toward the north, wherever the tree falls, there it lies. Now the clouds probably refer to the misfortune mentioned in verse 2. You don't know when the misfortune's coming. If the clouds are full, that means a storm's coming. And of course, verse 2 said that speculations about when evil times are coming are vain. You just don't know. And the idea is, don't speculate about when misfortune will come. Don't say, oh, I need to save up. I need to save up because misfortune might come and I won't be ready. No, you need to give anyway. You can always use that as an excuse not to give. I've had that thought cross my mind many times. It's harder to give when you don't have anything in the bank to back you up, any savings and such. It's very hard. I've done it, though. I remember one time I was about $80,000 in debt, had a failing business, had a family of three children plus a wife. She was very good about not needing a lot of money to be happy. She's very good about that, and thank God. And so when I would get a little bit of money in the bank account, I'd watch it. Oh, it's up to $103. I'd give $100. Oh, it's up to $105. I'd give $100. I wouldn't give any money if it was down to 99. But, you know, as soon as it got up over 100, out it went. And I lived on the edge. And by golly, God delivered me from every debt. And I've been debt-free ever since, and I'm 71 years old. I abhor debt. I was taught something. Stay out of debt and give. Well, anyway, back to verse 3. If the clouds are full, they pour out rain upon the earth. Again, that's referring back to the misfortunes mentioned in verse 2. You don't know what misfortune may occur on the earth, verse 2 says. If you look at verse 4, verse 4 says, one who watches the wind will not sow, and the one who looks at the clouds will not reap. And that fits the idea of don't use uncertainty about the future as an excuse not to give. Verse 4 says, one who watches the wind will not sow. Oh, something bad might happen. A storm might come. I better not give money to the poor because I need it to rebuild my farm when the wind blows it down. The one who looks at the clouds will not reap. Oh, gosh, it might be a rainstorm. It might wash out all my crops, so I better not give to anybody. Now, here's some other interpretations of this verse. If the clouds are full, they pour out rain upon the earth. I've taken the clouds to mean misfortunes, the same misfortunes mentioned in verse 2. For you do not know what misfortune may occur on the earth, so cast your bread upon the waters. But there's some other ways you can interpret the clouds. John Gill suggests rich men. If rich men are full, they pour out rain upon the earth. In other words, be generous. Don't keep those rich things to yourselves. Besides, the clouds will refill after they dump all the rain on the earth, just like rich men will be refilled once they give money away. All of that is true, but I don't think that's what Solomon meant. Clark and Jameson, Fawcett and Brown, on the other hand, suggest that the clouds refer to calamities and misfortunes, and those misfortunes fall on the trees, which are rich men. Whether a tree falls toward the south or towards the north, and so the rich men fall toward the south, toward the north, we don't know, but they're clobbered by the calamities that come. That's possible. Well, let's look at this tree that gets knocked down, falls toward the north, or it falls toward the south, and wherever it falls, it stays there, it lies there. John Gill suggests that this tree is a rich man who continues to provide fruit wherever he is after the calamities come. I don't think so. John Gill says, possibly, that the rich men are like dead trees, not a fruitful tree, but a dead tree. When they fall, they're just as dead as any poor man. I don't think so either. Option number 3 is from Clark and Jameson, Fawcett and Brown. The dead tree symbolizes one's disposition, which will be fixed upon one's death. After death, one cannot change, just like a tree that falls. The tree lies where it falls. So the idea there would be, if you're going to be generous, you're going to be generous. If you're going to be stingy, you're going to be stingy. Most probably, it would refer to someone who is stingy because the clouds pour rain on him, knock him down, and then he's stingy even after he dies. All of that's very nice, but I don't believe any of those three options are the ones that are controlling here. I believe that it's option number 4 from Albert Barnes. How a tree falls is beyond the control of anybody. Just like misfortune comes and puts one where one does not know beforehand. So don't let the chance of misfortune in the future keep one from giving. So, having given you all those options, let's go back and try to summarize verse 3. If the clouds are full, misfortunes, they pour out rain upon the earth. And whether a tree falls toward the south or towards the north, wherever the tree falls, there it lies. You can't control where that tree's going to fall, so go ahead and give, despite the misfortunes. And again, verse 4 backs that up. We go to verse 4 now. He who watches the wind will not sow, and he who looks at the clouds will not reap. You keep looking at calamities as an excuse not to give. then you're not going to give. And if you don't give, you're not going to be given unto. So a farmer watching the wind, he might be worried about the wind blowing away his seed. If he worries about that, he's never going to plant. He's never going to grow a harvest. Likewise, you worry about something might happen to you if you give your money away. Or if you worry too much about whether the recipient of your charity is an imposter or not, which is something you do need to worry about. But if you worry about that and let that be an excuse just not to give, there won't be any seed in the ground and you will not reap a harvest. Now, this idea of being worried about who you're giving your money to, I have been robbed royally by people I've given to. More than the average person, I could give you stories that would make the tears run down your cheeks and puddle on the ground beneath your feet. I'm not going to do that. You do need to worry about it. And believe you me, I thought about not giving anymore. I've become much more careful in my giving now. I won't give to anybody unless I know them, or unless it's an organization that has so much integrity. But there's so many Christian organizations that don't have integrity. I don't trust them. I trust people. I got to watch them operate, and then I'll give them some money. But just because there are crooks out there trying to get your money, that is no excuse for not giving. A farmer might look at the clouds and not reap harvest time. He might be worried that rain will ruin his seed at planting time so he doesn't plant. Likewise, he might be worried that rain will ruin his harvest at harvest time so he doesn't harvest. Either way, he's hurt. So we go now to Ecclesiastes 11, verses 5 through 6. Solomon continues, "Just as you do not know the path of the wind and how bones are formed in the womb of the pregnant woman, so you do not know the activity of God who makes all things. Sow your seed in the morning and do not be idle in the evening, for you do not know whether morning or evening sowing will succeed or whether both of them alike will be good." Again, this is the same idea. Keep on giving. You don't know what's going to happen in the morning. You don't know what's going to happen in the evening, but it doesn't matter. Sow your seed. Give to the poor or give to the ministry. Solomon gives two metaphors to show how we don't know things. We don't know the future, just like you don't know the path of the wind. Anybody can tell you which wind's going to blow. It shifts all the time. How bones are formed in the womb of the pregnant woman. You don't know how it's going, what's going on inside a mother's womb. And you don't know the future, but doesn't matter. Sow in the morning and do not be idle in the evening. Sow and reap, sow and reap. Give to the poor and reap what God gives back to you. Another option as to how you can interpret that phrase, not know, just as you do not know the path of the wind and you do not know the activity of God. One could interpret it this way. You don't know why God let someone fall into want. It doesn't matter. Go ahead and give to him anyway. I don't think that's the right interpretation. I think the context is very clear about not knowing the future and using that ignorance of the future as an excuse not to live. Now in verse 5, we see the word wind used in the expression, just as you do not know the path of the wind. Of course, wind can be translated as spirit, ruach. If we translate it as spirit, just as you do not know the path of the spirit and how bones are formed in the womb of the pregnant woman, the interpretation would be, we don't know how the spirit animates the baby in the womb. In other words, how the baby spirit moves the baby around. I think that's off the wall. Jameson Fawcett and Brown suggest that. Now, this idea of sowing to the poor, giving so that you may reap, it's in the scriptures elsewhere. For example, in Psalms 112, verse 5, good will come to a man who lends generously and conducts his business fairly. Dropping down to verse 9, he is given freely to the poor. His righteousness endures forever. His horn will be exalted in honor. The author of that psalm is unknown. We go now to 2 Corinthians 9, verses 6 through 10. Paul actually quotes Psalms 112, verse 9. As he writes to the Corinthians, "Now this I say, he who sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and he who sows bountifully will also reap bountifully." Now, this is talking about money. This is not metaphorical. This is directly talking about giving money. Verse 7, "Each one must do just as he has purposed in his heart." In other words, in the matter of giving. Not a tithe, by the way, but just what you've purposed in your heart. "Not grudgingly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver." Now here is the New Testament law, the law of Christ, about giving. Not a tenth, but cheerfully giving what you have purposed in your heart. "And God is able to make all grace abound to you, so that always having all sufficiency in everything, you may have an abundance for every good deed. As it is written, he scattered abroad, he gave to the poor, his righteousness endures forever." Where it was written was in Psalms 112, verse 9. This generous man, he scattered abroad, cast his bread upon the waters. He scattered abroad all across his fields. He gave to the poor. His righteousness endures forever. Now he who supplies seed to the sower and bread for food will supply and multiply your seed for sowing and increase the harvest of your righteousness. Now folks, this is not Cash Flow Dollar saying this. This is not Joel Osteen saying this. This is not Kenneth Copeland saying this. This is not Benny Hinn saying this. This is the Apostle Paul writing scripture, inerrant, inspired, and straight from the Holy Spirit. Give, and it will be given unto you. Jesus said the same thing. I should have quoted that verse too, Luke 6. Give, and it shall be given unto you, pressed down, flowing over. Now in verse 6, back to our chapter, Ecclesiastes verse 11, in verse 6, Solomon says, sow your seed in the morning. Why in the morning? Because if you sow early in the morning, it's just like waiting and sowing late. There's just as much chance of something bad happening in the morning, a rainstorm coming. So don't wait till the evening to sow, worrying about what might happen during the day. Go ahead and sow it. And don't be idle in the evening so you can harvest, so you can reap what you sow. We go now to Ecclesiastes 11, verses 7 through 10, and we will finish this short chapter. Solomon continues, the light is pleasant, and it is good for the eyes to see the sun. Indeed, if a man should live many years, let him rejoice in them all, and let him remember the days of darkness, for they will be many. Everything that is to come will be futility. Rejoice, young man, during your childhood, and let your heart be pleasant during the days of young manhood, and follow the impulses of your heart and the desires of your eyes. Yet know that God will bring you to judgment for all these things. So remove grief and anger from your heart and put away pain from your body, because childhood and the prime of life are fleeting. Now, ain't that the truth? Childhood leaves, and we all have a Peter Pan complex. Oh, I wish I could be a kid again, when things were just a little bit more innocent. How about the prime of life? Whew, that's gone for me, as I sit here with arthritis in my back, trying to keep my bones together, as I squint through my right eye, which is half gone because of a stroke or some kind of a stroke on my optic nerve. Prime of life is gone, folks. It goes fast. Well, let's see what the implications of this are. First of all, in verse 7, the light is pleasant, good for the eyes to see the sun. Metaphors are abundant, which refer to pain as darkness, or adversity as darkness. But light is good. So this light is just a symbol for good things happening. Indeed, if a man should live many years, rejoice all the while. Rejoice, because they're going to go. When you're a child, enjoy being a child. I remember one time I'd become a college student, and I looked out the window of my bedroom. I looked at the field where I used to play soccer and keep away and touch football with all the kids in my neighborhood. They were the happiest years of my life, despite the fact that my parents were in a horrible marriage. But I just love playing those sports on that field. And I looked at it and I said, I'll never do that again. It's over. Oh, even as I tell you about it, it breaks me up. I can't hardly stand it. So Solomon's point is, it's when you're enjoying life, you better keep on enjoying it. You better enjoy it while it's happening, because it's going to go. Everything that is to come, i.e. the future, will be futility. And even if things are good in the immediate future, sooner or later, you are going to die. Think about it. As long as there's daytime, guess what? Inevitably comes nighttime. Unless you live in Alaska where there's a 24-hour day, and even that's just for half the year, the sunshine goes away. It's going to get dark. You're going to die. So, Solomon says in verse 9, rejoice, young man. Now, of course, he's talking about enjoying the moderate pleasures of life. He does not advocate becoming a drunk or a glutton. But rejoice during your childhood when you're a kid. Let your heart be pleasant during the days of young manhood. Even as you grow out of childhood and become a young man, be happy then too. And it could be rejoice in spiritual things too. Somehow I don't feel like Solomon's all that spiritual. As I go through these proverbs, they seem very earthy, very practical, very this worldly. But at any rate, whatever he means, it means be happy when you're a kid and when you're a young man. Now, this could be given as straight advice, as Matthew Poole suggests, but it also could be spoken in warning, as Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown and Benson say and suggest, and Matthew Poole affirms. He's saying, okay, young man, rejoice while you can, because it's all going to be over. In other words, he's not really giving advice. He's just being ironic there and sarcastic. Go ahead, young man. You think you're having fun now. You just wait. You're going to die. I've told this story several times, but I love it. I was at a party. A little 2-year-old kid had something happen to him that was disagreeable to him, and he burst out crying, wailing, gnashing of teeth. And a friend of mine was standing there, looked at that little kid and said, "Okay, you think it's bad now, you just wait." So that's kind of the idea that this interpretation of verse 9 would be. I don't think so. I think he's giving straight advice here. Be happy while you can. Now, the last part of verse 9 does sound somewhat sarcastic. Follow the impulses of your heart and the desires of your eyes. Go ahead, do it. And if that's sarcastic, then that would make it more likely that the first part of verse 9 is sarcastic, too, about rejoicing during your childhood. But it could be straight advice, too. Follow the impulses of your heart, the good impulses of your heart. Do what's good. And the desire of your eyes, whatever your goals are, nothing wrong with that. Go ahead and do it while you still can, while you're young and got the energy to do it. And I think that's what it is. I could be wrong. The other view is that this is ironic. And Solomon is saying, all right, go ahead, follow the impulses of your heart and the desires of your heart. Well, I want to tell you, God's going to bring you judgment for all these things. That works too. But if you just take it as advice, Solomon says, okay, young man, follow the impulses of your heart, the good impulses, do your goals, accomplish your goals, and accomplish and receive the desires of your eyes. But be careful, because God will bring you to judgment if you let these things get out of hand and you start putting the impulses of your heart and the desires of your eyes ahead of God. That works too. However you want to interpret it, the idea is enjoy things now because you're going to die. Just to summarize it all, however you interpret it. In verse 10, Solomon says, so remove grief and anger from your heart and put away pain from your body, because childhood and the prime of life are fleeting. Remove grief and anger from your heart. Those things are most prevalent in young people, of course. Emotions are very powerful and stormy when one is younger. And a lot of those stormy emotions come from youthful lust. So Solomon says, put that away. Life is short. Your childhood is short. Your prime of life is short. Put all that away. And put away pain from your body. And if you get sick, get well as quick as you can. Because when you get old, you're going to have more pain than you got now. Remember, Solomon was old when he wrote this book. That's why it's a little bit more poignant when you read this. I'm enjoying this book now because I'm old. I'm 71. And I resonate with what Solomon is saying. And so, ladies and gentlemen, we have now finished Ecclesiastes chapter 11. I think we can summarize it by saying, cast your bread upon the waters. Be generous. Give to the poor. Give to ministries. Give to people. Give to your relatives. Give to anybody. God will give back. We are now prepared to go to our last chapter in Ecclesiastes in the next audio, chapter 12, which I will entitle, Remember Your Creator in Your Youth. Solomon seems to be here thinking back upon what it was like to be young. So I hope you stay tuned for our next exposition of chapter 12, and I hope you enjoyed this audio.